Okay, so we have one more guest for this show for today, and some of you might know her from the Lisa Ling This Is Life Furry Nation episode that aired on CNN in t was it 20 was it 2019? Yes, it definitely was. And this is the head of it was 2018? Oh, okay. So 2018. It is Weasels on Easels. So if you want to go ahead, tell us your name, who are you, what's your persona, all that good stuff.
Okay, well, to start off, as you heard, my name is Ashada. In some other places, I'm known as Allison Weir because before I was into the furry stuff, I was doing fine art, so my name was better known by my name. Currently, this time, I kind of dabble in everything. We mostly make fursuits because that has taken over the majority of our business. But historically, I have been painting wildlife artwork, sculpting, repairing collectibles, and doing a wide variety of mishmash things for the past 8 years. Our business went through a few different names early on as I was trying to learn what would work in the art world and how to market. And eventually, we ended up with the name Weasels on Easels, and that is what almost everybody knows us by at this point.
Such a cute name.
It really is.
Aw, thank you. It was kind of a joke at first, and then it stuck, and it's just been that way ever since. So it's not something I plan on changing anytime soon. I really think it's cute. So eventually, we need to make a weasel suit.
Yes, make a little mascot.
I've always wanted to do that with our stuff, but we just have never gotten around to it. It'd be really
Someday,
cute,
my
though.
dream is to dress up is our mascot Marvin, which is a weasel. He's like this pink weasel. Go around with a giant paintbrush and a paint palette with like cookies on it, and then hand out cookies. So that would be fun.
Aww, that's
That
such a cute
would be
idea.
amazing to see. I would love that. It's so cute. All right. So, with our first question of the night, what disability have you been diagnosed with? And you can answer or interpret that however you'd like to. Each of our guests kind of just go with it.
So when we talk about diagnosing a disability, I think that can be a really hard question to answer because when I view a disability, I don't necessarily view it as one diagnosis. In my case, I have a lot of different conditions that on their own may not be so difficult to deal with, but overlapping, it kind of creates a compounded condition in a way to where one condition makes another one worse and it makes another one worse. And at that point, disability is something I view as something that affects my life more so than just the condition's name. I have several different conditions that all affect me in different ways and make treatment difficult. I have been diagnosed for several years with a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, also known as EDS, which is a connective tissue disease that is genetic. I've also been diagnosed on and off with lupus and mast cell disease because they're like, you've got an autoimmune condition, but we're not quite sure what it is. So they keep hopping back and forth between that. And just going, let's just try a treatment for this and see if it helps. And some of it has, and some of it hasn't. And more recently, the one that's had probably the biggest impact on everything as of recent is that there has always been something going on in the background that we really haven't had an answer to. And it's been really difficult to come to an answer with that because some of the symptoms I have from the other conditions have made it so they haven't paid a whole lot of attention to it. But I was finally diagnosed with POTS, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which is a heart condition that affects your autonomic system. And in my personal condition, it is caused by my EDS and is a physical in origin because when my heart beats, my veins stretch and absorb some of that pressure, and that causes a lot of issues elsewhere. All the compounded conditions have led to me to develop epilepsy, and I have problems with seizures and have for many years. And prior to that, I was diagnosed with Asperger's and bipolar, which on their own were not something difficult for me to deal with. And it was just something I kind of lived with. But once I was diagnosed with these other conditions and it started overlapping, everything just kind of snowballed and became one problem after another. And it just kind of built up. I've also been diagnosed with fibromyalgia. No one really ever touches on that, and it's just, one of many things, but it's definitely been a rocky road dealing and trying to balance all the different conditions that have added up to define what is disability for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of different things that are just overlapping and causing issues. And that sounds so frustrating to deal with. I can't imagine.
It's really up and down from day to day. Some days I'm doing really good in the summer. It'll be bright and sunny. I'll run around and do stuff and I'll do perfectly fine. There are days in the winter where the cold just gets in my joints and I'm just in miserable pain. And unfortunately, these conditions have affected various areas of my life. I was in a car accident several years ago, and because of my EDS, my spine was damaged more than it should have been. And unfortunately, due to the conditions, now I'm suffering from degeneration in the spine. So it can take little things and make them a lot bigger of a problem than you'd anticipate that affect things down the road.
It's so just not fair. It's just not fair.
No, it's definitely not.
It's not. It's hard to sit there some days, and I won't lie. I mean, a lot of people see me as a big figurehead, but I'm no different than anybody else. There are days you do really good and you're great, and there are days you just break and you have to cry because it sucks and it's just something you have to deal with. And I find that sometimes it's better to just take that time to yourself than it is to just try and bottle it up.
No, definitely. Never keep things bottled up. That can make physical pain even worse as well. I know. So were you a furry before you began to get all of these symptoms or before your diagnosis per se, or did you join the fandom afterwards?
It kind of happened around the same time. Before I got sick, I used to be an endurance athlete, and I moved up to Idaho from Michigan when I was 17. When I moved out here, I was really depressed. My dad passed away when I was 14, and I went through a lot of trauma after that. And I was really overweight, and I was very determined to grow and become something of it. And so I really pushed it. And in a year, I lost almost 100 pounds, and I got really healthy and really fit, and was doing endurance racing on bikes and endurance swimming stuff, and was really enjoying my time living out in the mountains and was doing really good. And just starting to dabble in my art and trying to push some stuff out there on the side, you know, outside of work, and was doing really, really good and was really at the peak of my health and was really enjoying it. And then one summer I got really tired, and I couldn't really explain it. They'd already diagnosed me with fibromyalgia. I had been having some arthritis for a couple of years and was just like, okay, this happens, you know, I'm fine. You just work through it. Well, I started getting exhausted, and you know, I would ride my bike 9 miles to go to work and ride my bike 9 miles to go back home. And that just suddenly started getting more and more difficult. And I couldn't really explain why. And this went on for a good 6 or 7 months. And then I had my first event, and I didn't know what it was, but I remember that I was on my bike and suddenly I was in a lot of pain. Something didn't feel right. And I pulled over and got off the side of my bike, and then I passed out. And then I woke up with a police officer and an EMS and had had something, and then was taken to the hospital, and they weren't really sure what had happened and had sent me home. Well, what I didn't know is that I had had a partial seizure and it hadn't been witnessed. And this started something that very quickly snowballed over the next several months. And it was a few weeks after the first one, I had another one. And then a couple of weeks after that, I had one at work in the back room by myself. Someone came back there and found me unconscious and called an ambulance. I ended up in the hospital again. And about a week after that, they just hit me constantly. Every day I was having these. Finally, in October, this had started in like August of that year. They brought me in and were like, we think it's a seizure. You need to go see this neurologist. They brought me to the neurologist. They're like, well, normally we would do a 30-minute EEG, but I don't know what's going on with you, and we don't have a good description, so we're going to have you come in and do an inpatient and do an 8-hour EEG so we can look at you. Came in, did an 8-hour EEG, sent me home. She called me a few days later. I'm still having them left and right. And she goes, that is the worst EEG I've ever seen. I do 8-hour EEGs hoping for 1 or 2 spikes, and you had one every 2 to 3 minutes the entire time, yet did not show a seizure. God. But I had all the spikes, and they're like, I don't know how you're standing. I don't know what's going on. And then they started trying me on all these epilepsy medications. None of them were working. They were making problems worse. One of them literally made me sick, and I got really psychotic and then still continued having seizures. And that just made it 5 times worse because now I was waking up angry from them. And it got really bad. And from November to February, we started tracking them. I had over 300 seizures. And then they stopped. They went away. We had no idea why. We had no idea what caused them. We couldn't find anything to treat them. Said, okay, that was weird. Maybe we're done. And I was still exhausted. And I was starting to have headaches. But that wrecked my body. Having that many seizures in that short of a time completely destroyed my joints. And in that 6 months, I went from being an endurance athlete to being in a wheelchair because I could barely walk at that point. And I started physical therapy. And I did physical therapy 3 days a week for almost a year because it was the end of the year, so insurance overlapped, so they were able to do that. And from that point, PT has become a life thing for me. I have to do it regularly. I have to be in aquatic pools doing exercise because if I stop, my joints just waste away. And then I lose all the muscle mass. I was later diagnosed in the couple of coming years, and they diagnosed me with EDS, started questioning if I had lupus. They went back and forth for a while. They're still back and forth between whether I have lupus or mast cell activation disease. I don't really have a solid diagnosis. It's just you have an autoimmune condition. We don't know what it is and we don't know what's wrong, but it's kind of close to these. So we're going to treat you for these. And that's basically what the treatment plan with that has been. And it's been difficult because, of course, everything else overlaps. And finally getting that POTS diagnosis this year was big. Like, we had been considering for several years that I might have it, but nobody had the right equipment to test me. And finally, when we moved to Oregon, they had that equipment. And when I started talking to the doctor, the specialist about it, he was like, oh, yeah, it causes this and this and this and this and this. And all of these problems I'd been having that didn't fit the lupus and they didn't fit the POTS and they didn't fit the EDS, none of it had made sense, finally suddenly made sense. And there are things I remember from my childhood and as an adult growing up and things that affected my ability to do my sports that suddenly clicked and were like, you're not crazy. You have been feeling heart flutters because that's what it does. That's what POTS is. That's part of your condition. And it's just been steadily getting worse. And now we finally got a hold on the condition of kind of stopped it where it's at and are starting to look at different treatments. So that's been an amazingly validating thing to just suddenly be like, hey, we actually have a name for that. You're not crazy.
That's something a lot of people fear, a diagnosis, and a lot of people will fear the name of what they have or anything like that, or knowing what they have. But I know for a lot of other people, it is a relief to finally know what the hell is wrong with you. I remember when I was in the hospital, like, all my friends were like, are you scared? Are you scared that you have like diabetes? Or because I was really young at the time. And I was like, no, I'm not scared that I have diabetes. I'm scared that I don't have diabetes because I hope that it's that because that's the symptoms for it and it's not something else. You know, like, it brings so much peace actually finally knowing what's wrong with you.
Knowing
or what's
what
going
you're up
on
against,
in your body.
Finally.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Because, like, all my life, like, I don't know how many tests I was run through and I was ADD, I was ADHD, I had this, I had Asperger's, maybe I was autistic, and they couldn't pinpoint it. And it wasn't until like 5 years ago that I got something called a karyotype test, a blood test, and it finally gave me the one answer that I've been seeking for God knows how long. And it was such a relief to know that I wasn't crazy, and it was something, but it was... It's nice to know what you're up against, even though you know there's really like nothing you can do to cure it. It gives you at least something to go with other than not knowing.
No, for sure. One of the biggest difficulties with having a disability that impacts your life or having a chronic illness is having people always come up and go, oh, why can't you come to this? You said you'd come to this. And then just looking at them going, I don't know. There's something wrong with me, but I don't feel right. So I'm not going to go is really difficult when it's easier to look at them and go, oh yeah, I'm sorry. My POTS is acting up today and actually have a descriptor. It feels more valid. Like people are taking you more seriously. I don't walk into doctor's offices now and get as much of the, well, are you sure that's what it might be? Now it's just, oh, I see you've been diagnosed with this condition. That's a good thing to keep in mind. How can we treat you better? I've been in hospital situations where I haven't had diagnoses and they just give me some random answer and then basically go, I don't know what's wrong, and send you home. And I've had other situations, like more recently this year, I hurt my shoulder at the beginning of the year, and I got on there and I said, I hurt my shoulder and I have EDS. So it's a concern that I may have damaged the joint. And they said, oh, wait. And they left and immediately came back with a specialist in their hospital who was familiar with my condition. And she sat down and went through this whole list of things and what I've done and haven't done and what treatments I've received and what type of diagnosis I have received with it. And it was one of the most validating things I've ever had to be in a hospital, actually have someone take that seriously. Because most places I go have no idea what Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is. And when you tell them, they just look at you and are like, what? So it's, you know, just having those diagnoses can make a huge impact in a lot of different ways, even if you can't treat them. But sometimes it does open ways to new treatments, and it is scary getting a new diagnosis. But in a lot of ways in my life, it's been a lot more validating and a good thing to hear. And it's just, you feel validated, like you're not crazy. Because when you live with it long enough and you still don't have an answer, you just, there are days you just sit down and you go, maybe I'm nuts. Maybe it's not that. And then finally, it doesn't feel that way anymore.
And this is especially the case for women who have health issues. If you don't have a diagnosis, if you don't have a name for what's going on with you, if you just describe what's wrong, unfortunately, statistics and personal experience from many women I know, including myself, say that doctors just won't take you as seriously. They'll just shrug off and be like, I don't know what's wrong. Or maybe you're just anxious. Or, could they be like, maybe it's cycle pains or anything like that. Unfortunately, just being a woman or people perceiving you as a woman, if you're not, if you don't identify as one, then like going into a hospital can be all the more stressful because of that. So having an actual name and an actual diagnostic to go to a doctor with will make them treat you instead of just send you off with a shrug, you know? I don't know if you've experienced that kind of discrimination in a hospital before, but I certainly have.
Unfortunately, it's something I have gotten a lot, both in personal medical as well as in a hospital. Earlier this year, we went in to see a new neurologist. Part of moving from Idaho to Oregon meant I had to get in with new doctors. So I started getting referrals to all these different clinics. And they sent me to this neurologist who kind of had mixed reviews, but I needed to get into a neurologist and be with some ongoing treatment. And so I got into this neurologist and he immediately suggested that my epilepsy was caused by my weight. And then everything I said from that point on, he ignored and looked at my husband. And he told me several times over that he thought I needed to do this and he thought I needed to do this and I needed to check your thyroid. And it has nothing to do with this, but you're overweight and you need your thyroid check. And then looked at my husband and went, she need her thyroid check. Make sure she gets her thyroid check. And the entire 40 minutes was
No.
And every time I try to say something, he would talk over me and then look at my husband and go, make sure this happens. And he did this like 5 times. And I walked out of there and got over to the labs. And apparently he requested the thyroid check, but then marked on my paperwork that I had no problems with the thyroid. And so insurance wouldn't cover it, and then told me that he wouldn't see me unless I paid the out-of-pocket cost to get that test done that wasn't needed, necessary, or required.
Mm-mm, I wouldn't go back there. And that's another thing, is like weight discrimination in hospitals is also such a problem. It's so frustrating.
I've had so many doctors suggest that the problem was my weight, and I'm like, this is a joke. When I got sick, I weighed 150 pounds. I was the fittest and healthiest I have ever been in my life. I could kick a soccer ball across an entire field, and I would ride my bike for 50 miles just because I was bored. That was when I got sick. There is absolutely no way this condition is caused by weight. Aggravated by it? Certainly. My joints hurt. I'm struggling to lose weight. It is very difficult to lose weight when you're in a wheelchair. But I still try, and I try to maintain my weight, and I am aware that it's a problem, but it is absolutely not the cause of my condition.
No, it's definitely not. And I hate it when doctors make everything about that. It's just, it's not the reality of the situation, especially in your case.
Yeah, they do the, you're overreacting to your pain. And I'm like, I ruptured an eardrum twice and didn't go in either time. I'm went in days later to have them tell me, you ruptured your eardrum. Why didn't you go into the doctors? And I was like, oh, I've had worse pain. And they were like, what?
Sometimes I feel like doctors don't know what true pain is.
Yeah, well, and it varies for everyone. Like, I live in daily pain, so there are things that should probably have been a lot more painful that aren't, you know? And other positive ends, I've never actually broken a bone because I dislocate my joints before I break them. So you've got pluses and minuses, you know?
So before you mentioned that, you know, you have a fursuit making business and you've done art professionally as well. Is there anything, I'm sure the answer is yes, but is there anything about like your symptoms or your disabilities that get in the way of like your suit making or your art? Or does it help you in any way? Is it the opposite? Does it make things more difficult to do, like, within the fandom?
This is a weird answer, but it's kind of all of that. There are a lot of places it helps me mentally. You know, being able to put on that suit and put on that mask and go out there, whether I'm in my chair or not, gives me time to deflect and enjoy myself and maybe for that little while forget that I'm sick. I mean, it always comes back, but being able to have that escape is a big thing for me. And it's been a big impact in my life. The moment I started suiting, I fell in love with it. And I realized it made people happy and that made me happy and that made me want to do it more. But in the same way, it's also affected a lot of our work, and a lot of our studio was a struggle until we realized we needed to quit trying to work with our disabilities and or working around them and learn to start working with them. So before I would just go, I'm having a bad day, I'm going to work anyways. And then I'm get tired and then I have more issues. So what we started doing was finding ways to improve our studio to make tasks easier for us to do and quicker, so we didn't have to spend as much time doing certain things. They can be really simple things. Like, we made a wooden pallet to put my chair on, so it's at a better height to the desk. That's more comfortable for me to work. Or it could be more complicated things. Like, we realized that rolling bolts out on our table to cut them was really difficult. So we built a rig on the table that holds our bolts so we can store them on the rig and pull them out over the table and then cut them with a roller cutter. And just being able to set up the table with a cutting mat and make a station for cutting made it so that I didn't have to tear down another station to cut things out. And it made it quicker to cut things out. One of the biggest things we found that has helped us in our work is going, okay, a lot of people work in a really tiny studio, but we're disabled and we really struggle with picking up and tearing down a table to do different tasks, you know, going from sewing a whole bodysuit down to making a little tail by hand or working on a head. I mean, I sculpt head bases and I have to move everything from my clay. So we worked on moving into a larger place. It took us a couple years to get into one. And we now have it set up so there is a station around the house, like the whole house is our business. And there's a station for every part of the process, so we don't have to tear down anymore. And that saves us 2 or 3 hours every day and a good 5 to 10 hours every week of cleanup, because now it's like 10 minutes to go through and pick up each station. And it takes us a couple hours to clean everything and get through stuff. And it has just made stuff so much quicker. And I mean, we are not fast makers, and I don't anticipate that we will be. But that gives us more time to spend making sure the work is clean and done well and is what I want to be going out there, you know. Part of our disabilities has showed us that, hey, getting on fursuits is hard. So part of our mission has been, let's make them easier. Let's make them more comfortable. Let's make it quicker to get in and out of them. Let's make it quicker and easier to clean them, because that in itself makes it easier for us to care for our own as well. And why not share that with other people? So now we're lining our suits and we're making all the padding removable, and we're making the padding and all of the parts machine washable if we can. And the parts that aren't, we're trying to make them as easier to keep clean as possible. We're trying to find better ways to make them stored, better ways to make them travel, you know, easier ways to put them on. And now it takes us 5 to 10 minutes to put our suits on, where before all the padding was loose and it was taking us a good 20-30 minutes to suit up. And even on a bad day, it takes me 2 minutes to pull my suit off and I'm good to go, you know? So just these little things throughout our career to make it easier and grow with it, and taking our own conditions and growing our business alongside of them to be productive, was a big thing.
I feel like knowing the physical struggles of having like health issues can like, and like, this isn't necessarily a positive thing because you still have to deal with, you know, these health problems, but now you have that perspective as a person who struggles with that. And as other people exist who also want a fursuit with health problems. So you yourself have experience. You know what can make suiting up and suiting difficult with these health issues, and being able to build suits better, not only for just the average able-bodied person, but be able to build a suit that's easier to clean, easier to wear, faster to take on and put off. That's going to help other people with disabilities be able to have accessible fursuiting, you know, which is a great skill to have, even if it's coming through some negative experiences.
Well, that's been a big thing we've been working on is, you know, everybody has unique conditions. And I've had people message me and go, I have an insulin pump. Can you put a pocket for a port? Sure. I overheat easily. Is there a way you can make it quicker for me to get out of my fursuit? Sure. There are these options to open it to make it easier. We could put the zipper on the front. We could do a double zipper that's easier to open. We could do magnets. We could do buttons, whatever you need, you know. Doing different things and working to accommodate with people is one of the things I absolutely love in our work. And, you know, giving people that chance to get out there. I've had people message us and go, hey, I've always been afraid to suit, but I've been seeing you suit in and out of your wheelchair, and it makes me feel like I can do it. What can I do to suit in my wheelchair? And we talk about different tails, maybe make it so you have an extra tail that attaches to back your chair, or make it removable from your suit so you can sit down if you need to. Just different little things to make it work, because every disability is unique and everybody needs something different. So being able to have something that accommodates and is built to each specific person is a really important thing as well.
I'm sorry, I've been so silent. I've just been, it's not that I like, I've been listening, but I've just been, I don't know, I've been crying over here because it's just, there's so much that you've gone through. And it's, I keep asking myself this question over and over again. How do you do it? Like, you have all of the cards stacked against you, yet somehow you get up every day and you make it work. I'm sure there's like tons of furries or people out there that want to know what the magic solution that you're doing, because God forbid they're trying to get through it and they don't know how. But somehow you have like all of this going on, and yet you're still finding happiness and you're still finding joy. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cry, but I'm just like, I'm mind blown. It's just how do you do that? I'm sorry. I don't mean to. It's just, it's so, I'm sorry. You're inspirational.
There are a lot of days I don't know. You reach a point where you just keep going to go because you don't know really what else to do. And I've got the same stubbornness that comes from my mother, and you just go, you got to do, you know. I've dealt with artist block in the past, and I've dealt with the difficulties, and there are days I've been so hard on myself, and I've just, you got to keep pushing. And one of the hardest things I've had to learn this year is to know when to slow down and take a step. And I think that's probably the biggest impact it's had us for this year, is the point at which we realized we shouldn't be trying to work against our disabilities, but we should be finding ways to make our studio and our setups and our job work for us. You know, being able to listen to your body and understand what it can do. And I think one of the biggest things is being open, being forward with your customers. You know, that's why we're not doing deadlines. It's why I keep telling people that we're trying to work on a queue. It's why we're downsizing, is to get things to something that's manageable for us. And one of the hardest things with conditions like this is recognizing what is manageable. When we sit down and want to ask what makes me happy, I mean, honestly, the biggest thing is the people, the reactions. You know, I want to see people happy. It's why I go and volunteer in my suit. It's why I do kids events. It's why I go to cons. It's why I make suits. It's why I do my art, because I struggle to find my own happiness. And sometimes it's easier to find that happiness in the faces of the people who are out there supporting you.
That's definitely true. I know whenever I find myself in a hard spot, looking into actually doing like charity work for suiting, can be one way. Like, it could be a little selfish because it cheers yourself up in the process, but like, seeing other people take joy in what you're doing, can help a lot, even if it's just for a little while.
Just giving back. I mean, I think one of the things that pushes me so hard is just that so many people have tried so hard to give back to me and be supportive that I just want to be able to give back the best that I can. You know, that's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me doing my work. I absolutely love doing my work. But at the end of the day, I like sharing it. And that's why I live stream. And that's why we're starting to do tutorials, because I want to share that with others. I want people to see and feel and have that same joy that I do doing my work. And I want to be able to share that with others. And that's why I do it. It's why I have for a long time. That's always been one of the visions of our work, is just like, I think the old motto on our website was like, taking the joy that we find doing our work and giving it to you so that you can enjoy a bit of what we enjoyed bringing it to life. And that's a lot of what I do. I enjoy making people happy.
I want to apologize. I didn't mean to like break down and cry, and I've just really moved. So,
you should never have to apologize for having an emotional reaction. There are so many different types of people in this fandom, and I feel like so many forget that there's actually people behind all these characters, and behind like the fursuit makers, there's real people making them with real life problems, and you got to give them real life patience. And it's just being able to
emphasize.
Have empathy.
There you go, you got it.
And sympathy for the human condition as it is. Like, the world isn't all just digital and art and pictures of costumes. Like, there's real people, and life can hit you hard, but you keep going and you use these things as coping mechanisms. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all still real people, and being able to share emotions and be able to understand each other's, you know, lives is important.
In a whole, I want to see more than that. Can I tell a quick story of something that happened to me at a con?
Please do.
I haven't really been to a whole lot of cons in the past couple years. It's, you know, we're still getting out there into the con field and starting to vend and try and get into doing different events like that. But something that really struck me is how behavior changed and the way people interacted with me in fursuit before and after the Laceling episode. Before that, I would go to events and I'd have people pushing me and pushing me and pushing me. Can I try on your head? Can I have a hug? Can you take a picture? Hey, I know you're tired. Wait, don't take a picture with me. Take a picture with me. Take a picture with me. And I'm like, I need to go drink. I'm overheating. No. Just one picture. Just, it'll be quick. And it was a constant. And after that episode aired, a lot of that demeanor changed by the time June came around and May came around, because more and more people had seen it. And when I went to BLFC, I immediately noticed a difference. And when I was out there suiting, there were people who recognized me, but they gave me space. They asked for hugs. They asked me if I needed anything. They wanted to make sure that I was good before photos were taken. I wasn't being shoved in the corners. And I had people going, yeah, I saw you on the episode. I know you've got your disabilities. It's awesome to see you out here fursuiting. Is there anything I can do for you? Are you thirsty? And having that total difference in parallels between when I was out there before and when I was out there post-episode, especially when I had my wheelchair with me, was very, very different. And I really wish people were like that for more suitors and not just people who they know are struggling, because everybody's under that suit. And you, the end of the day, you don't know who's struggling and who isn't. And in my opinion, I think that should be irrelevant. I've watched telephone get pummeled in a hallway and shoved up against a wall for people wanting photos. I've watched other suitors have their horns pulled at, their wings pulled at, their tails pulled at because people wanted attention. And I think if I could make one big impact in the community, it would be really just pushing for people to slow down, remember the moment, and wait. And if someone needs to sit down, let them sit down. Give them space. Let them do what they need to. You know, I'm just excited as the next person to get to go meet the great Popufer and take a picture with him. But if that suitor has expressed that they need to rest, then by all means, you should let them rest and wait. You know, that's been a big thing that I've been seeing. And I'm seeing a lot of bigger suitors starting to want to push for change this year. And I'm really hoping it makes an impact, because that was something that greatly influenced me at BLFC and really affected my demeanor with the way I suit in public.
That is, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's something I've noticed a lot with furry specifically, and especially their reactions to like popular fursuiters or more familiar fursuiters, is that I feel like so many people are so fast. It's all about the now, and all about the screen time and the picture and the video.
Exactly.
It's like, one, I feel like people don't truly get to experience like their lives or get to experience their convention when they're experiencing it through a camera instead of through their mm-hmm. eyes. And then at the added stress of them like constantly trying to get the attention of others, like for the example of Telephone being crowded, I've seen her get crowded before at past conventions and other, you know, popular fursuiters. And it's just, people don't understand the space that they need. And not only because they're basically wearing a couch and it's hot and you can't see, but also just, it's a person under there. Give them some space. If you saw, you know, them out of suit, you wouldn't do that. And again, you don't know the person underneath the suit. I'm pretty sure Telephone herself actually has back mm-hmm. problems. I think she got kicked by a horse, I think. Something happened a long time ago and it affected her back really bad. So like, you never know. And like, for example, I'm a diabetic. I've had low blood sugars before and I've been needing to get back to my hotel room. Like if I forgot my fruit snacks to fix it. 1 year at FWA, I had an emergency. I needed to get back to the hotel room stat and I needed to get on the elevator and it was really crowded. And so many people were rushing into the elevators and like pushing fursuiters out of the way, taking advantage of the fact that they can't see. And like, I needed to get in. So I took my head off and I was like, hey, I'm having a medical issue. Can I please get in this elevator? And only then would people let me in. But like, I'm not saying that just because you're a fursuiter, you get special privileges, but don't take advantage of them just because they can't see and they're trying to keep their costume on for whatever reason. Like, that's a person. That's not just a stuffed animal that's walking
around. Well, it's
true.
You need to respect that. I've had that happen myself. I've been to Anthrocon once and the con was great and I enjoyed it. But there was a day we were out fursuiting and we were struggling to get back of our room and I was overheating. And it was packed. People weren't letting us through. We were struggling to get up there. I didn't have my wheelchair. I was hurting. I was exhausted. We finally got back up to our room and I passed out outside of our door of our room. And I passed out and had several seizures. And then I slept for 14 hours straight and missed my suit delivery the next day because I was having a medical event. And
yeah,
I have had issues where, I mean, people do this to artists too, you know. That's why I say it's important to be upfront about your issues, but people have gotten wanting their suits faster and faster and faster, wanting art faster and faster, and I keep seeing all these artists who are little and who are new going, I said it was this deadline and something happened and I missed it by a week and now I'm bewildered, or we had a bunch of things pummel on us and it, you know, what we thought was going to be a year turned into two, and now I'm being bewildered and I lost all the money and I put all this labor into it. And it's a thing that, you know, you're seeing because everybody, they want it and they want it now. And it's difficult because a lot of people go through growing pains. Our business grew very, very quickly. We went through a lot. We moved, we had car accidents. I had to give refunds because I was in a car accident, you know, and it's difficult to balance that stuff. And a lot of people don't realize that there's a really high percentage of makers who make fursuits who are disabled. And the reason they do that is because they can't work a job out of the home. And by working at a job from your home, you're able to adjust your studio, adjust your job, and fit it around your disability. So while you may not be able to work at all out of the home, you can work an almost full-time job at home because you're able to set up your studio and your career and work around your conditions. But one of the most important things is being straightforward with people and making them aware of what's going on and keeping them updated. And if you realize there's something you can't do, you also need to respect that. That's why we did away with deadlines in our own work and also cap the queue so we don't get overloaded and can focus on what we have with one thing at a time and slowly work our way through things. And I think it's important on both ends for people on both sides to have a lot of patience because people do go through these things and you are not the only one who has an issue. You know, there's always other people out there who are struggling just as much, if not more. And that doesn't invalidate your own issues, But I think one of the biggest things is just slowing down, remembering the moment, and having respect for your fellow furry, your fellow maker, and your fellow human. It's a really important thing.
Definitely so important. And you've had just a lot of experience with, you know, the growing pains is definitely a thing I've experienced in the past, and having to deal with a business as well as trying to upkeep your hobbies and in personal life. Is there any advice you would give to someone who was like coming into the fandom, or maybe coming into a new business, like starting their first fursuit business or art business in the fandom? Is there any advice you would give to someone who was like also working with a diagnosis of some kind, who also wanted to pursue that? Because I know I've personally have heard people talk about, I want to make fursuits and I want to take commissions eventually, but I'm scared I can't because I have so many health problems, or my family has so many health problems and I take care of them, etc. Do you have any advice for those people?
Yeah, I have a few things. You know, a lot of it's been learned through a lot of trial and error. And my first thing is start small. If you think you can make a suit in 4 weeks, plan that it's going to take you three times as long. If you think you can make 5 suits in a year, make 4. Make room for something to come up. Because regardless of what you think, something will always come up. And you need to be ready for that. And also watch what's going on. Because you may not realize all these little things you're taking are a big thing. But working with 20 customers to make 20 different parts is a heck of a lot more work than working with one customer to make a suit. Because you got to remember the customer service hours. A lot of people very quickly forget the time that adds up from communicating and working with customers, especially when problems arise. Because working in customer service is never going to be perfect. There's always one person out there who's not going to be happy, or they're going to want their suit sooner. And if you can't make it, you need to be honest that you can't do a deadline and that you're working on a queue or however you choose to do it. And the biggest one is just being open and being honest and making sure that you don't bite off more than you can chew. Don't do what we did. Start off very little and grow very slowly and make sure it's within your own range of what you can do, because your health can be very level for a while and then suddenly take a turn for the worse and dip. And it's better to make a suit faster than someone's expecting than it is to make it later than they were.
Absolutely. Starting slow is so important, because I feel like a lot of younger people especially, they have a lot more time than maybe older people do, maybe because they don't have as much school, or they don't have, you know, a job as well as fursuit making or anything, or a family, things like that. And they don't realize that when you actually get into both of those things and you get a pile of stuff on your plate, it's really hard to dig through it. And then the people you're serving end up getting angry.
Yeah, it's
starting small is so important.
We had to reset, you know, and basically we went, okay, for every 2 to 3 things that go out, we'll only fill it with one, because you need to have stable income. A lot of people forget that a lot of these people doing these, this is their only job. And while they are behind, they also have to respect that sometimes we do cons and we take in parts, because that is the bread and butter. That's what puts food on the table. And if we can't pay rent and we can't eat food, then nobody gets their suits. So a lot of times patience is important. That's where we had to look at our stuff and go, okay, we are taking work in, but what's the least amount of work we can take in and survive and do okay? And that's a big important part of figuring out stability, because that's going to be different for everyone. So we had to roll it back and go, okay, well, we have this much work on the queue. We have, this is what we need. And I can get out this much to take this much in. And doing so, we've managed to cut our queue in more than half this past year. And we, you know, eventually accepted the fact that just because we're growing and we're large, I don't think the wait time is ever going to be less than 8 months to a year. But our long-term goal is having it around that point, because I have some customers who've waited 2 years for their suits. But every person who has been polite and waited and been patient has gotten something. And every single one of them has messaged me back and said, oh my gosh, this was so worth the wait. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and are happy. And all of the people who have gotten fussy and frustrated and been unhappy have left, or, you know, had their canceled their contracts and left with nothing. And, you know, I try to have the same patience with our customers, and being able to share that patience back and forth is really important.
And I feel, I don't want to say this like, okay, when a fursuit maker works on something, you know, everything they put out there should be quality. But I will say from experience myself as a suit maker, if you as a customer are kind and polite through the whole process and patient, especially, your fursuit maker will actually be more excited to work on your commission. They will, you know, want to do more. And the more excited someone is to make something, usually the better it turns out. So if you work with a maker and you're patient and you're polite, more love is going to be put into that piece and you're going to get more out of it. If I get an especially kind and patient customer, I usually throw in free shit.
Yeah, like, that's what we do.
Like, I mean, hey, you were super nice exactly. and patient, so I gave you, you know, arm sleeves and an extra tail.
Yeah, it's like you've been waiting. You know, we realized we went over your budget, so we took the time and we did this for you because you've been patient and very kind. And a lot of people, like, they don't understand how much of a difference that makes, because every minute and hour and day you spend arguing with a maker over their policies, over the fact that they have a queue, over the fact that they have health issues or anything else that could come up, is time that they're not working. So if you waste
exactly.
3 hours a day for twice a month, that's 6 hours a month, which adds up to what, 6 times 12 is, I'm bad at math. Anyways, that's a lot of time at the end of the year. And all of
72?
Yeah, that's 72 hours in that year that would have gone into making people's art. And in, you know, suits can be made anywhere from 50 to 200 hours, depending on the maker and the quality and what type of build it is. You know, that's an entire suit of work, where if you had just been patient and waited, that's an entire suit of work you wouldn't have had to wait for. You know, that accrues really, really, really fast. And that's a really important thing to keep track of, especially because a lot of artists aren't just working on one thing. They're working with lots of different customers and they're balancing everyone and working with different people and trying to make sure that everybody gets their work in a timely manner. And a lot of that adds up really quick. You know, our suits tend to take a lot more on the hour time because we do everything by hand. We're learning to make all of our own parts. We're sculpting your bases. We're carving all of the foam by hand. I mean, we're not necessarily sculpting everything. Every suit has unique padding. Every suit is being fully lined. Every suit is being double and triple stitched to make sure it's going to last you a long time. And that stuff takes time to do, especially when you have disabilities and you have to struggle past them, because mm-hmm. what one person can do in an hour might take me 3 times as much energy, and then I can do it in 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours. And so that's a hard thing, is early on we never considered the idea of using a time clock, and recently we've started using time clocks to track hours, and I had no idea that I've been pushing 70 hours a week because 25 of them is working directly with our customers. And I had no idea, you know. So then you get a customer who is spending 10 hours a week asking for updates, whose suit is, you know, like down the queue or whatever. And that accrues a lot of time really fast that could be spent working with other customers or working in art, because the less time I'm having to do customer service, the more time I'm working on your suits. And that's a really important thing, because it does take a lot of labor and physical time that goes into it. So the more time I can put towards it, the faster stuff goes out.
Absolutely.
Sorry. No, I mean, I'm fine.
Okay,
I'm fine. Like, I probably, I don't know if I've ever actually expressed this in past guests, but if I have to add up all the guests that we've ever had, not just on Straight From The Muzzle, but back when we were called for media, I gotta say, you're probably the most inspirational to listen to. Just hands down. You're like an idol at this point. Because, like I said, you've been through it all, but at the same time, it's like, I don't have anything on, like, close to what you have, but even if I'm having a bad day, I know that I could probably get up and get through it. It's gonna suck, but I'll be okay. But it's nice to know that there's other people out there like you who have gone through it all, but somehow still make it work. Like, that's, if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what does at this point, because it's just so amazing. And to just be in your sheer presence, to listen to you talk about everything, your ups, your downs, what you would, you know, advise, all these things. It really is such an honor just to even talk with you. I just want to say that. And I'll probably say that forever.
Thank you. No, I've been through a lot. And the more you go through, the harder it is to judge other people, because everybody's been in a situation.
Exactly.
And I am by no means perfect. I make mistakes. There are things I've done with my business that I should and shouldn't have. And there's a lot of things that have changed in the way we've had to do things to make things work, to be fair to everyone. And all you can do is learn from it and grow and keep going. Just every day, keep going. It's worth it. It's worth it to someone. It's worth it to anyone. And if anything, do it just to spite your enemies. You know, just keep going. I love it. There's always a reason.
I love it. Anything. If I can spite my enemies, I'll do it. Anything. You know, because if anything, it just makes me happier a little bit. Little bits here and there.
I'm not sure I'd go that far, but at the very least, you know, one of the hardest things was just training my body to always want to do art. I'm feeling bad. I'm going to go do art. I'm feeling great. I'm going to go do art. I'm listening to music. I'm going to go do art. So now whenever I'm upset, depressed, or having artist block, my immediate go-to response is to want to go do art. And I essentially Pavlov myself into always making art. And that's just how I handle everything.
That is such a cool technique, Pavlov. That's actually quite interesting.
It's hard. It took me 3 years to train me into that. And this year has been the absolute hardest test of it. And it is the first time I've actually had artist block where I've had to take a couple days off of work because I had to work through it. And the whole time I sit there going, I want to do art. 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 Sunshine. I want to do art. And it's just, you know, everybody goes, how do you work through artist block? How do you work through artist block? And I'm like, you make art, even if it's bad, throw it in the garbage, do it again, keep doing it. And eventually you'll work through it. And it's hard. It is so hard. But at the end of the day, what matters is that you're creating. No one else ever has to see it. You could burn it in the fireplace. I won't lie, I have. But at the end of the day, what matters is that you're creating, because anybody who's artsy, no matter what you do, whether you dance, whether you swim, do sports, do art, do anything creative, that's a part of you. That's a part of your soul, and you need to feed it and take care of it.
I think, I don't have any words on that. You literally just blown everything out of the way like a nuclear bomb. FBI, don't listen to this.
A bomb with smiles, you know, make laughter. Laughter's good. Laughter's great. Laughter means someone is smiling somewhere.
Absolutely. With our last question, if there was one thing you could tell those who are able-bodied in the fandom, those who don't have really any disability whatsoever, they're just fine, what would it be?
Hmm.
Well, that's a hard one because it's not.
That's a really hard one.
Mine would be let the fursuiters in the elevator. Yes.
For real though.
Not just the fursuiters. If some person walks up with a walker or is coming up and having breathing issues, let them in. You know.
Let them in.
Oh man. See, that's a hard one because there's all sorts of things I can say to enlift all the people who are struggling, but it's harder to find something to enlift the people who are not struggling, you know. But at the end of the day, every single one of those people is struggling through something. And if you're not, you could be tomorrow. So I say make the most of what you can. And if something does happen, keep going. Make the most of it anyways. Make the most of every moment of your life. Find something you enjoy and do it. And grow in it.
Never know.
Because the moment you stop growing, you're at a dead end. And you always should have a reason to grow and give. And even though you might not have struggled with something, what is something easy for you to handle might be much, much, much more difficult for someone else to handle. So I think the biggest thing I can say is just that patience is a virtue. Don't jump on someone because to you it's something easy. You know, someone may struggle to read because they have a condition and you don't. So don't harp on them if they struggle. Like, just a lot of it's just acceptance and the patience, and that's a big virtue in life is just really respect one another.
Well said.
Respect and patience is also important.
That's a really good answer to that question, because you could have gone down any route with that. Mm-hmm, that's actually a really good one. You never know. Like, you have to make those moments count. My mom had a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer. Well, she had it. She beat it, but she's pretty close to getting it back again. But before that, we didn't really have the greatest relationship. I always rebelled. But my mom has gone through a lot in this life, very much like what you have, Ishida, a lot. She's dealt with so many things. And she got the diagnosis, and I felt, because it's not something that this woman deserved. It's just not what she needed. But it's odd to find happiness in this because it's because of the cancer that I have become the closest with my mom. Every moment that we have together is the best moment. And we just share that moment and we keep going. And I look forward to the next one because I just don't know when she won't be there again. So I have to make those moments count. And I think that's,
you need to,
that's
you
the
always,
best advice to give.
Should.
Really. It really is. Make every moment count because you never know what's going to happen next.
That is absolutely. 6 years ago, if I looked down the road, I would have had no idea this is where things were going. I was in the prime of my health. I was doing fantastic. I was working through promotions at work and growing on myself as a person and just discovering life at 20. You know, what do you think of as a 20-year-old? What do you do at 20-year-old? Do you sit there and think that when I turn 22, I'm going to be in a wheelchair? In and out for the next years? Do I think that at 35, I will be fully bound to the wheelchair? Because at this point, that's where it's going. And that's something you have to accept. But you don't think about that. You know, you don't think about what could happen down the road. And at any point, that can be cut short. So make sure you're doing the best to enjoy the time that you can. It's important, you know, and realize that while you're 20 and in your prime, someone else could be 20 and struggling.
Absolutely.
And you never know. You don't know what they've been through. You don't know what they're going through. And you don't know where life is going.
Well said.
Definitely. Well, we really appreciated having you on the show. This was a really important one. It's a longer episode, but we appreciate everybody who has listened through all the way. It might be a two-parter. We're not too sure yet because this is pre-edit.
No, it's going to be a two-parter. I'm actually going to make this one a specialized episode because it's in itself. It's probably one of the best I've ever recorded.
Yeah. But thank you so much, Asheda. And we will put all of your links in like your Twitter, your Facebook, if you'd like, in the description of this episode. If you want to take a second, go ahead and boost yourself. If you want to tell people where your website is, where they can find you, anything like that.
Of course.
Really.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. My work, again, is Weasels on Easels. We have our own website. It's currently half built and being redone to overlap to fursuits. But if you really want to look us up, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, Fur Affinity. It's 96037 for some reason. Don't ask. But most everywhere you look, it's Weasels and Easels. If you type Weasels and Easels to Google, you'll get a whole page of our pages and advertisements for the Weasel Easel, because apparently that's a product and it's not mine. So don't ask.
Awesome.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciated talking with you. Thank you for bringing so much light into this podcast. We really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
It.
I'm happy. That's what I do. I try to help and try to give, and I'm not always very good at it, but you just keep going.
And folks out there, if you ever have questions or you want to share your experience, you are more than welcome to reach out to us. You know where to find the links. You can email us at talktothemuzzle@gmail.com. You can find us on Telegram. Bean and I are pretty much always open to answer any questions you may have. But once again, thanks for everyone
Absolutely.
For listening, for participating. Thank you for coming on to our show and talking with us. It was such a pleasure to have you on.
Of course. Thank you guys. It's really
Absolutely.
Appreciated.
But I guess we'll see you guys all on our next episode, which is, I'm not quite sure. So that sounds about right. But anyways...
That's the straight from the muzzle way.
So,
oh, I know. Make it about cookies. Ooh. You can't go wrong with cookies.
Well, I can't. Dang it! I'm out of cookie puns.
When did you have cookie puns?
Always.
Got to go to the cookie pun store.
God, what is that? For Bruce Almighty has one. It's like, and that's the way it crumbles, or something like that.
Oh, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. Have a great night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.